but the Lord provided in regard to her. During this time, my mind was preserved calm and resigned to God. Afterward, that good sister almost continually interrupted me. I answered everything she desired of me, both out of condescension and from a principle which I had to obey like a child. When I was in my apartment without any other director than our Lord by His Spirit, as soon as one of my little children came to knock at my door, He required me to admit the interruption. He showed me that it is not the actions in themselves which please Him, but the constant ready obedience to every discovery of His will, even in the minutest things, with such a subtleness as not to stick to anything, but still to turn with Him at every call. My soul was then, I thought, like a leaf or a feather, which the wind moves what way soever it pleases, and the Lord never suffers a soul so dependent upon and dedicated to Him to be deceived. Most men appear to me very unjust when they readily resign themselves to another man and look upon that as prudence. They confide in men who are nothing and boldly say, such a person cannot be deceived. But if one speaks of a soul wholly resigned to God, which follows Him faithfully, they cry aloud, that person is deceived with this resignation. O divine love, dost thou want either strength, fidelity, love, or wisdom to conduct those who trust in thee and who are thy dearest children? I have seen men bold enough to say, follow me and you shall not be misled. How sadly are those men misled themselves by their presumption. How much sooner should I go to him who would be afraid of misleading me, who, trusting neither to his learning nor experience, would rely upon God only. Our Lord showed me in a dream two ways by which souls steer their course, under the figure of two drops of water. The one appeared to me of an unparalleled beauty, brightness, and purity. The other two have also a brightness, yet full of little streaks, both good to quench thirst, the former altogether pleasant, but the latter not so perfectly agreeable. By the former is represented the way of pure and naked faith, which pleases the spouse much. It is so pure, so clear from all self-love. The way of emotions or gifts is not so. Yet it is that in which many enlightened souls walk, and into which they had drawn Father Lacombe. But God showed me that He had given him to me, to draw him into one more pure and perfect. I spoke before the sisters, he being present, of the way of faith, how much more glorious it was to God and advantageous for the soul than all those gifts, emotions, and assurances which ever cause us to live to self. This discouraged them at first and him also. I saw they were pained, as they have confessed to me since. I said no more of it at that time. But as he is a person of great humility, he bid me unfold what I had wanted to say to him. I told him a part of my dream of the two drops of water, yet he did not then enter into what I said, the time for it being not yet come. When he came to Gex, it was to make the retreats. I told him the circumstances of a certain time past. He recollected that it was a time of so extraordinary a touch with which the Lord favored him, that he was quite overwhelmed with contrition. This gave him such an interior renovation that, having retired to pray in a very ardent frame of mind, he was filled with joy and seized with a powerful emotion, which made him enter into what I had told him of the way of faith. I give these things as they happen to come to my remembrance without carrying them on in order. After Easter in 1682, the bishop came to Tanon. I had occasion to speak to him, which when I had done, our Lord so pointed my words that he appeared thoroughly convinced. But the persons who had influenced him before returned. He then pressed me very much to return to Gex and to take the place of prioress. I gave him the reasons against it. I then appealed to him as a bishop, desiring him to take care, to regard nothing but God in what he should say to me. He was struck into a kind of confusion and then said to me, since you speak to me in such a manner, I cannot advise you to it. It is not for us to go contrary to our vocations, but do good, I pray you, to this house. I promised him to do it. Having received my pension, I sent them 100 pistoles, with a design of doing the same as long as I could be in the diocese. The bishop said to me, I love Father Lacombe. He is a true servant of God, and he has told me many things to which I was forced to assent, for I felt them in myself. But, he added, when I say so, they tell me I am mistaken, and that before the end of 6 months he will run mad. He told me he approved of the nuns which had been under the care and instruction of Father Lacombe, finding them to come up fully to what he had heard of them. From thence I took occasion to tell him that in everything he ought to refer himself to his own breast, or to the instructions there immediately received, and not to others. He agreed to what I said, and acknowledged it to be right, yet no sooner was he returned than so great was his weakness that he re-entered into his former dispositions. He sent the same ecclesiastic to tell me that I must engage myself at Gex, that it was his sentiment. I answered that I was determined to follow the counsel he had given me, when he had spoken to me as from God, since now they made him speak only as a man. Chapter 8. My soul was in a state of entire resignation and very great content in the midst of such violent tempests. Those persons came to tell me 100 extravagant stories against Father Lacombe. The more they said to me to his disadvantage, the more esteem I felt for him. I answered them, perhaps I may never see him again, but I shall ever be glad to do him justice. It is not he who hinders me from engaging at Gex. It is only because I know it to be none of my vocation. They asked me, who could know that better than the bishop? They further told me, I was under a deception and my state was good for nothing. This gave me no uneasiness, having referred to God the care of requiring and of exacting what he requires and in whatever manner he demands it. A soul in this state seeks nothing for itself but all for God. Some may say, what then does this soul? It leaves itself to be conducted by God's providences and creatures. Outwardly, its life seems quite common. Inwardly, it is wholly resigned to the divine will. The more everything appears adverse and even desperate, the more calm it is, in spite of the annoyance and pain of the senses and of the creatures, which for some time after the new life raise some clouds and obstructions, as I have already signified. But when the soul is entirely passed into its original being, all these things no more cause any separation or partition. It finds no more of that impurity which came from self-seeking, from a human manner of acting, from an unguarded word, from any warm emotion or eagerness which caused such a mist, as it then could neither prevent nor remedy, having so often experienced its own efforts to be useless and even hurtful, as they did nothing else but still more and more defile it. There is in such case no other way or means of remedy, but in waiting till the Sun of Righteousness dissipate those fogs. The whole work of purification comes from God only. Afterward this conduct becomes natural, then the soul can say with the royal prophet, though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall never fear. Though war should rise up against me, in him will I confide. For then, though assaulted on every side, it continues fixed as a rock, having no will but for what God sees meet to order, be it what it may, high or low, great or small, sweet or bitter, honor, wealth, life, or any other object, what can shake its peace? It is true our nature is so crafty that it worms itself through everything. A selfish sight is like the basilisk's, it destroys. Trials are suited to the state of the soul, whether conducted by lights, gifts, or ecstasies, or by the entire destruction of self in the way of naked faith. Both these states are found in the Apostle Paul. He tells us, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me. He prayed thrice, and it was said to him, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. He proved also another state when he thus expressed himself, O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? To which he replies, I thank God it is done through Jesus Christ our Lord. It is he who conquers death in us through our own life. Then there is no longer a sting in death or thorn in the flesh, capable of paining or hurting any more. At first, indeed, and for a pretty long time after, the soul sees that nature wants to take some part with it in its trials. then its fidelity consists in withholding it, without allowing it the least indulgence, till it leaves everything to go on with God in purity as it comes from Him. Till the soul be in this state, it always sullies, by its own mixture, the operation of God, like those rivulets which contract the corruption of the places they pass through, but flowing in a pure place, they then remain in the purity of their source. Unless God, through experience, makes known His guidance to the soul, it can never comprehend it. Oh, if souls had courage enough to resign themselves to the work of purification, without having any weak and foolish pity on themselves, what a noble, rapid, and happy progress they would make. But few are willing to lose the earth. If they did advance some steps, as soon as the sea is ruffled, they are dejected. They cast anchor and often desist from the prosecution of the voyage. Such disorders doth selfish interest and self-love occasion. It is of consequence not to look too much at one's own state, not to lose courage, not to afford any nourishment to self-love, which is so deep-rooted that its empire is not easily demolished. Often the idea which a man falsely conceives of the greatness of his advancement in divine experience makes him want to be seen and known of men and to wish to see the very same perfection in others. He conceives too low ideas of others and too high of his own state. Then it becomes a pain to him to converse with people too human, whereas a soul truly mortified and resigned would rather converse with the worst by the order of providence than with the best of its own choice, wanting only to see or to speak to any as providence directs, knowing well that all beside, far from helping, only hurt it, or at least prove very unfruitful to it. What then renders this soul so perfectly content? It neither knows nor wants to know anything but what God calls it to. Herein it enjoys divine content, after a manner vast, immense, and independent of exterior events, more satisfied in its humiliation and in the opposition of all creatures by the order of providence than on the throne of its own choice. It is here that the apostolic life begins. But do all reach that state? Very few, indeed, as far as I can comprehend. There is a way of lights, gifts, and graces, a holy life in which the creature appears all admirable. As this life is more apparent, so it is more esteemed of such, at least as have not the purest light. The souls which walk in the other path are often very little known for a length of time, as it was with Jesus Christ Himself, till the last years of His life. Oh, if I could express what I conceive of this state, but I can only stammer about it. Chapter 9. Being, as I have said, with Ursulines at Chinon, after having spoken to the Bishop of Geneva, and seeing how he changed, just as others turned him, I wrote to him and to Father Lamothe, but all my efforts were useless. The more I endeavored to accommodate matters, the more the ecclesiastic tried to confound them. Hence I ceased to meddle. One day I was told that the ecclesiastic had won over the good girl whom I dearly loved. So strong a desire I had for her perfection that it had cost me much. I should not have felt the death of a child so much as her loss. At the same time I was told how to hinder it, but that human way of acting was repugnant in my inward sense. These words arose in my heart: Except the Lord build the house. And indeed he provided herein himself, hindering her from yielding to this deceitful man, after a manner to be admired, and very thwarting to the designs of him and his associates. As long as I was with her, she still seemed wavering and fearful. But oh, the infinite goodness of God, to preserve without our aid what without his we should inevitably lose. I was no sooner separated from her, but she became immovable. As for me, there scarcely passed a day but they treated me with new insults. Their assaults came on me at unawares. The new Catholics, by the instigation of the Bishop of Geneva, the ecclesiastic, and the sisters at Gex, stirred up all the persons of piety against me. I had but little uneasiness on my own account. If I could have had it at all, it would have been on account of Father Lacombe, whom they vilely aspersed, though he was absent. They even made use of his absence to overset all the good he had done in the country by his missions and pious labors, which were inconceivably great. At first I was too ready to vindicate him, thinking it justice to do it. I did not do it at all for myself, and our Lord showed me that I must cease doing it for him, in order to leave him to be more thoroughly annihilated, because from thence he would draw greater glory than ever he had done from his own reputation. Every day they invented some new slander. No kind of stratagem or malicious device in their power did they omit. They came to surprise and ensnare me in my own words. My God guarded me so well that therein they only discovered their own malevolence. I had no consolation from the creatures. She who had the care of my daughter behaved roughly to me. Such are the persons who regulate themselves only by their gifts and emotions. When they do not see things succeed, and as they regard them only by their success, and are not willing to have the affront of their pretensions being thought uncertain and liable to mistake, they seek without for support. As for me, who pretended to nothing, I thought all succeeded well, inasmuch as all tended to self-annihilation. On another side, the maid I had brought, and who stayed with me, grew tired out. Wanting to go back again, she stunned me with her complaints, thwarting and chiding me from morning till night, upbraiding me with what I had left, and coming to a place where I was good for nothing. I was obliged to bear all her ill humor and the clamor of her tongue. My own brother, Father Lamothe, wrote to me that I was rebel to my bishop, staying in his diocese only to give him pain. Indeed, I saw there was nothing for me to do here, so long as the bishop should be against me. I did what I could to gain his goodwill, but this was impossible on any other terms than the engagement he demanded, and that I knew to be my duty not to do. This, joined to the poor education of my daughter, affected my heart. When any glimmering of hope appeared, it soon vanished, and I gained strength from a sort of despair. During this time, Father Lacombe was at Rome, where he was received with so much honor, and his doctrine was so highly esteemed, that the sacred congregation was pleased to take his sentiments on some points of doctrine, which were found to be so just and so clear that it followed them. Meanwhile, the sister would take no care of my daughter. When I took care of her, she was displeased. I was not able by any means to prevail on her to promise me that she would try to prevent her contracting bad habits. However, I hoped that Father Lacombe, at his return, would bring everything into order and renew my consolation. Yet I left it all to God. About July 1682, my sister, who was an Ursuline, got permission to come. She brought a maid with her, which was very seasonable. My sister assisted in the education of my daughter, but she had frequent jarring with her tutoress. I labored, but in vain, for peace. By some instances which I met with in this place, I saw clearly that it is not great gifts which sanctify, unless they be accompanied with a profound humility, that death to everything is infinitely more beneficial. For there was one who thought herself at the summit of perfection, but has discovered since, by the trials which have befallen her, that she was very far from it. O my God, how true it is that we may have of thy gifts, and yet be very imperfect and full of ourselves. How very straight is the gate which leads to a life in God. How little one must be to pass through it, it being nothing else but death to self. But when we have passed through it, what enlargement do we find? David said, Psalm 18:19, He brought me forth into a large place, and it was through humiliation and abasement that he was brought thither. Father Lacombe, on his arrival, came to see me. The first thing he said was about his own weakness and that I must return. He added that all seemed dark, and there was no likelihood that God would make use of me in this country. The Bishop of Geneva wrote to Father Lamothe to get me to return. He wrote to me accordingly to do it. The first Lent which I passed with the Ursulines, I had a very great pain in my eyes, for that same imposthume which I formerly had between the eye and nose returned upon me three times. The bad air and the noisome room which I was in contributed hereto. My head was frightfully swelled, but great was my inward joy. It was strange to see so many good creatures who did not know me, love and pity me, all the rest enraged against me, and most of them on reports entirely false, neither knowing me nor why they so hated me. To swell this dream of affliction yet more, my daughter felt